Hello, this is Taylor Elwood, your mad scientist and magical experimenter, and I'm really excited because tonight we're going to be talking about a favorite topic of mine, which is pop culture magic systems. And in this case, we're going to be learning about how one person in particular created a pop culture magic system around Legend of Zelda, and that person is Claudia Jetter. So if you're on the pop culture magic group, then you've probably seen her post sometimes. And so I'm really excited to have her on board. I do want to note that my new book, Pop Culture Magic Systems, is actually coming out on August 11th, and there is a link to it. So if you want to learn more, if you want to hear the first chapter or read a free sample chapter, you can do that. And without further ado, I'm going to bring Claudia on.
Oh.
Hello, Claudia.
Hey, Taylor. How are you?
How are you?
Today?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing tonight.
And it looks like we have another guest as well with us, your kiddo.
Yes,
it's nighttime here for us. Yeah, sorry, I'm brushing his teeth.
It's okay.
So let's get started.
Yeah, so first of all, tell us who you are and where we can find you on the web.
So I'm Claudia, and you guys can find me on my Tumblr, which is Highly Enshrined Maiden on Tumblr, and also on the Pop Culture Magic Facebook group that you run. That's
excellent.
Pretty much it, where I am on the web.
And that's perfectly all right. Yeah, perfect. So what I've always found interesting and just kind of following your journey is that you do a lot of pop culture magic around Legend of Zelda. Of course, you do some other stuff, too. I think you've been working with Persona 5 lately, correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So first off, when you first started practicing magic, did you start with pop culture magic right away, or did you find pop culture magic a little while later?
So when I first started with magic, I did not start with pop culture magic. I didn't actually know that was a thing when I first started. So initially when I started out searching with the Greek gods, the Theoi, and that didn't really fit. And so after a while, I was like, well, you know, I want to find something that's going to fit me. And then I kind of started running into a bunch of posts about pop culture magic on Tumblr. And it was like when there was like that huge discourse about it like a couple years ago. And so I was like, well, that's really intriguing. But maybe that's not for me. I'm not going to try that yet. And then they started showing up more and more and more. I finally just kind of took the hint and like, well, you know what, I'm going to try this. And so that's how I got into pop culture magic when I started.
Excellent. Well, yeah. You know, Tumblr does seem to be a bit of a gateway for pop culture magic, so that doesn't really surprise me too much. I mean, it's actually been kind of interesting because I remember that particular. It was like a couple years ago. It was like I think the spring of 2015 or something. There were some people who were upset about the whole notion of pop culture magic. So they posted stuff, and then people who were pro pop culture magic, including myself, posted stuff. And it was just kind of a little merry-go-round circus about the whole thing. But, you know, but I don't think either side really convincing the other of the validity of either's argument, which is usually what happens when people argue. You know, you have one side who says one thing and one side says the other. So when you first got into pop culture magic, it sounds like it was Legend of Zelda that first called you. Is that the case, or was it something else?
Actually, it was Cardcaptor Sakura that was at first. And like, you know, I'm a 90s kid, so I was all into, you know, the 90s anime and cartoons and Sailor Moon and Cardcaptors. And lay down, please. Sorry.
It's okay.
And, you know, stuff like that. So, like, I started looking in the Cardcaptor Sakura at first and Sailor Moon, and, like, I found some, like, spells and stuff that that worked, it still didn't really feel like quite the right fit. I'm a huge Legend of Zelda nerd, And, I have, the Hyrule Historia, and, I have a bunch of, fan-made books, and, my boyfriend makes jokes all the time about my, obsession with Legend of Zelda. So, it kind of connected for me, after playing Twilight Princess. I bet this would work. Because Legend of Zelda has a lot of magic in it, and a lot of different ways you can access the magic, and it's shown in the game. And there's a lot of different games, so there's a multitude of ways you can go about it based on which game you choose to draw from, or if you want to just draw from the series as a whole. So that's kind of where I started, and then built on from there.
Yeah, I remember playing the original Legends of Zelda. I was an 80s kid, so that's when I kind of started playing video games. And, of course, I remember the first one. And one of the things that kind of struck me about it was that they had the music, of course, which, distinctive music. But they also had, all these different tools that Link had to use in order to go and get to wherever he wanted to go and I can totally, and they totally build off of that with subsequent games. I mean, I haven't played all of them, but I mean, I remember playing Legend of Zelda 2, where there's a side scroller, and then Wind Waker, and a couple of others.
Hold on 1 second, Sam. What is it?
Are you talking about me?
No, I'm not. I'm on the phone. Okay, don't speak.
Sorry, go ahead. No, that's okay. So I mean, I definitely could see how there could be some magical elements. So for people who haven't necessarily played Legend of Zelda, or maybe they have, but they haven't thought about doing magic before, where would you suggest they start, both in terms of getting to know the Zelda universe and do some research, but also in terms of the actual magical system they could start to build?
So I would say where to start as far as research goes is start with the timeline, because the timeline, the games are separated in the timelines split after Ocarina of Time. So you have the child timeline where Link gets sent back in time at the end of the game to relive his childhood, and then and that line has Majora's Mask and Twilight Princess. And I think also Minish Cap and the Four Swords game. And then we have the adult timeline, which continues after Adult Link defeats Ganon and gets sent back. And that's where Wind Waker and Phantom Hourglass and Spirit Track sit. And then you've got the downfall timeline, which is where Ganon defeats Adult Link. And that's where you have, the original Legend of Zelda and Legend of Zelda 2 and A Link to the Past, the Oracle series. I'm trying to think, there's one other game that's on that timeline. So, and then Skyward Sword sits at the beginning of the timeline. So if you're going to start research, you're going to want to start with Ocarina of Time and then build through the timeline. As far as starting with magic goes, that kind of depends. So I say start with either Skyward Sword or Ocarina of Time, because both of those games are where they built kind of on the same system where you use, where Link uses music in order to access different areas of the game and move further in to the story. And you also see where some of the tools, like some of the history of some of the tools that he gets in Ocarina of Time, you see it in Skyward Sword. Because then everything else branches out because of the timelines, and so things change up a little bit once you get past Ocarina of Time. So I would say start there, if that makes any sense.
Well, yeah, I mean, it makes sense to me. I mean, I think it would make sense to other people listening. And if not, I mean, hey, do a little bit of research. Do you find, other than the games themselves, do you find that there are any, like, online sources, wikis, or anything like that that people could refer to or that might be helpful?
Okay, so my two favorite wikis to use are Zeldapedia, which I guess is Zelda.wikia.com, and then the Zelda Wiki, which is like Zelda.gamepedia.com, something like that. They have really, really good, like, most of the info on pretty much all of the games, and they're well organized, and they're well admin, you know, they're well moderated, so generally you can trust them to be accurate. And Zelda Dungeon is good too. They have both information on the game. They have a lot of really good tutorials for and walkthroughs, or if you're having like difficulty playing through one of the games. So that's for online. And then of course we have a small Zelda pop culture magic community on Tumblr. Actually put a list together a couple weeks ago with a bunch of us who have blogs that are for Zelda magic. So you can probably check out my blog, and I'll reblog that that list tonight so that people can see it at the top of my blog if they go tonight.
Yeah, and send me a link to your blog, because then I'll include that. Oh, sorry.
Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, send me a link to that blog, because then I can post it in the show notes, too, for people.
Okay, yeah, I'll do that. There's some good sources, for getting, all the information on the games and whatnot. But if you just Google, Zelda Wiki, then both Zeldapedia and the Zelda Wiki should both come up as the top three results.
Now, when you were developing your system of pop culture magic around Legend of Zelda, did you draw on any traditional magical systems or traditions that, you know, would kind of help you provide a structure for it?
I'm kind of just winging it, to be honest.
Winging it, it's okay.
Yeah. So I know, me and the community on Tumblr, we're kind of trying to develop little holidays and stuff. That's just So we're working it out, but we don't have any super specific traditional magic structures that we're building off of.
Well, and I mean that's certainly one approach to take with developing a pop culture magic, is just to kind of make it up as you go. I think it's certainly a viable one. Would you say, though, that, for example, are you using anything like correspondence charts, when you're looking at, the Triforces or some of the tools or anything? Are you saying, okay, this is what this tool corresponds to, or is it just something entirely original?
Oh, yeah, we do have some correspondences. Ocarina of Time introduced, the sages. This is a podcast that I like to move to there's the Sage of Light and the Sage of Water and the Sage of Fire, and you have to save them in Ocarina of Time. And so that's an elemental correspondence right there. And then, of course, the three goddesses we've got Din, the goddess of power, and Sorori, the goddess of courage, and Neru, the goddess of wisdom. And so there's correspondences for the goddesses as well. We've kind of subdivided them, the sages element under the three goddesses. So Din, goddess of power, presides over the sage of fire and the sage of spirit and the sage of earth, which is was earth and wind were added in Wind Waker. And then Ferrari is presides over a sage of wind and a sage of forest and the other one. And I think it's we put shadow with water. I don't remember what the other one was. Oh, and the sage of light. And so then Nehru presides over the sage of water and the sage of shadow and what was the other one? The sage of time, I think we gave for her for that one. Then they all get basically three of the elemental correspondences under them, aside from power, wisdom, and courage. Which is, they make up the Triforce.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Thank you for sharing that. It's always interesting to me to see how people put a given pop culture into magic and make it into a system. So you mentioned, among other things, that you were also developing some holidays. So can you tell us a bit about what you're doing with that and like what you're developing as you're coming up with it?
So going back to the elemental correspondences, now this isn't me that came up with this. This is another Tumblr blogger. Her blog is Sun to Moon, Moon to Sun on Tumblr. And she came up with, splitting the year up. So then you've got the time of light and the time of fire and things like that. And so I'm not super familiar with all of her more specific correspondences because she's the one doing most of the work on developing that. But she has, certain rituals that she does and, each particular time that she's in has, one might be, the time of shadow would be, for shadow work and reflecting on oneself, and then the time of spirit would be, for ancestor veneration, things like that. So I would definitely encourage people to go check out her blog and ask her about it, because she's got, a lot more information at hand than I do at the moment on that.
Well, that's cool. I mean, I think it's great that and that there are multiple people. So do you find there are any challenges that occur when you're working with multiple people online on creating a pop culture system of magic? And if so, what are your suggestions for handling those challenges?
Part of the issue is, of course, you can't physically meet up and, compare notes and, have, an in-person, ritual. And then, of course, some people live in different time zones, and so one person might be on when everybody else is asleep, or, there might be, five people on, and then, two people are at work. And so sometimes the issue really is coordinating your time with each other, so that way you can, have more effective conversations. And so that really is just going to take effort on the part of the group to really learn and figure out how to coordinate around each other's schedules. At least with being online, everything's usually written down in one place. So then if everybody's having a discussion or whatever, then you can go back to it later and, here's that reference that we were talking about before. So, really, it's just working on each other's schedules and just making sure you keep track of everything.
Oh yeah, that's important. Do you have a centralized resource place that you keep everything that you're working on, or do you have different people who are assigned to keep track of certain things?
So we actually have a Discord chat that we all put together. Hold on one second. So we have three sandwiches, chicken butter, garlic, and one chicken sandwich. For example, put horseradish on it. Okay. All right. Yes, we have a Discord chat that a lot of us are on, and that we use to communicate, and then, of course, we communicate on Tumblr. And so, like, those are our main two places of communication and basically, like, archiving. Because we've all got, like, different posts on our blogs and whatnot. excuse me. So that's, like, where we keep track of everything. And, of course, you can just, you guys, if you want the Discord chat link, matter, you can just contact me about it. I'm the admin. I'm one of the admins of the chat group. And you guys can just, like, contact me on Tumblr for it. To say I have the new messenger system thing that sort of only kind of half works.
So in creating the pop culture magic system, are there particular spirits from Legend of Zelda that you work with? Are there particular spirits that you don't work with? Or, and I'll use a different parlance too for other people. Like, are there particular characters that you work with or particular characters you don't work with, and why?
Okay, so the characters that I work with are Hylia, who is the white goddess who was introduced in Skyward Sword and is also in Breath of the Wild. And so she's the main goddess that I work with. And then, of course, there's Nehru, Jin, and Ferrari, who are the golden goddesses. And then, of course, for other characters, there's Link and Zelda occasionally and Midna from Twilight Princess. So those are who I all work with. I don't work with any of the villain characters from the game. Those there's hold on 1 second. Yeah.
Sure.
Then they're going to sleep. And sorry.
No worries.
The villain characters are the villains. So while some people might feel, more in line with the villains, that's okay for them, but that doesn't really work for me. So I work with Link and Zelda and Midna and basically all of the goddesses in the series so far.
Well, I think it's notable that there are some spirits or characters that you wouldn't necessarily work with. I don't think it's a bad thing per se, because with any pop culture, you kind of have to recognize who/what you connect with, and also what you don't connect with, and really what kind of energy you want to be inviting into your life. So that makes a lot of sense to me. I could certainly see in one sense that, like Ganon, for example, could be, the Zelda equivalent of kind of like the deity of the underworld, or something along those lines. But that doesn't necessarily, of course, with that comes, certain things that you really have to ask yourself, like, do I really want to be dealing with this guy? Because he's got a lust for power that, like, exceeds anything, and he's willing to betray people to do that, to get that. So it's, and of course, that's not knocking anyone who chooses to work with Ganon or anything like that, but it's just kind of an interesting thing, I think, that sometimes people will think, if I'm going to work with this particular pop culture, I have to work with all the characters, all the spirits. And I would say,
you don't have to work with all of the characters.
No, you don't. I mean, you could certainly do like a kind of an introduction, kind of get a feel for them and say, okay, is this one I want to work with or not, if you want to, but I don't think you necessarily have to go any further, than that. I mean, it's sometimes I think, it's important to remember that, because people do get concerned sometimes, like, oh, my... is there things I should or shouldn't be doing? I'm kind of curious, do you find that the tools themselves in Zelda, kind of like the different items that the characters can pick up, do you find that those have their own kind of spiritual identity? And if so, how do you work with that?
So definitely, there are a couple of, aside from the Master Sword, who
has the spirit Phi residing in it, and introduces Skyward Sword. I know that there's a couple other items from the series that are said to have, like, a spirit within them. So, like, the Scale Boomerang has a wind spirit in it. And, like, when you get it in Twilight Princess, like, the spirit will, like, feel and be like, yes, thank you for freeing me. I'm going to help you now. I can reach my true power, and you can use it to help you get through the rest of this dungeon. So, like, some items, yeah, definitely, I would say, have their own magical spirit presence to them. And it would, like, be the same way as working with, you know, the spirit of any other magical tool. You have to have the right fit, so if your energies don't really work well together, then that means you're going to have to do more with put more effort into working with that particular magical tool, or just choose to work with a different tool. And of course you have to, you know, care for it just like you would any other spirit, because otherwise they, you know, the spirits can, you know, if they feel a little neglected, they'll let you know.
Yeah, they definitely will.
Yeah. Like I have a replica of the Wind Waker from the Wind Waker game, and I also have a miniature of the Master Sword. So it's like about the size of a dagger, a knife, but it looks just like the Master Sword. And initially, I got the Wind Waker first. But it ended up not really meshing with me very well. The spirit in it took to my son better than it took to me. So that's now his. which is why I ended up getting the Master Sword, the miniature Master Sword. And I use that now. Because a wand and a, I don't know if it's pronounced the same or Athame or how it's pronounced, but they both have similar uses in witchcraft, which is directing and calling down energy and whatnot. And so that's what I use the miniature Master Sword for. And that meshes a lot better with my energy, and, generally just works better. So sometimes it's a matter of finding the right fit.
You know, what fascinates me too is that, you know, in this case, I'll let you take care of that.
What? We'll see. You're not even, but that's tomorrow. Okay. We'll probably do around 5 o'clock, yes. Yeah. Okay.
So, anyways, I was saying, what I find fascinating in this case is that you've taken something that's, you know, typically considered a video game, and you've actually gotten actual physical artifacts for it for your magical work. And I think this again is something that people can do, but they don't always necessarily realize they can do. So where would you suggest people go if they want to try and get some type of physical artifact, as opposed to just the video game itself, which can also be its own form of magical work, and we'll get into that a bit later?
You're mostly going to be finding stuff from, like, independent artists, so, like, going on Etsy. I've gotten a lot of my magical tools from Etsy, I have a replica of the Mirror of Twilight that somebody made, and I got it from Etsy, and the Master Sword, is going to be easier to find than anything else. Everybody's got their own version that they've made, so you can pretty much Google Master Sword replica and you'll get tons of results.
And but yeah, most of my stuff I've gotten from like Etsy and Store Envy. So that's where you're gonna find a lot of stuff through independent sellers who wanted to make, who just wanted to make the items from Zelda. Like somebody on Etsy, like there's several people on Etsy actually who made the same medallion. And like have made them in different ways. Like some are made of wood, some are made of acrylic. Somebody made the goddess pearls from the Wind Waker that you put on the statues in order to access Hyrule underwater. Somebody made like a small gate of time from Skyward Sword. So they have them like the size of a coaster. And so like you're really gonna find a lot of stuff through independent artists and sellers, which is good because then you can, you know, support your independent artists. and then, like, Nintendo has some, like, official merchandise, mostly, like, figurines and stuff. Yeah, most of your stuff's going to come from like, Etsy and Store Envy and websites like that where people make them on their own.
I think it's interesting how more and more people are actually creating their own tools. You know, when it comes to pop culture magic and magic in general, but mm-hmm. I think it's just kind of an interesting thing to see at work. I've done that myself sometimes, and there's always a very visceral experience with it, and just having physical tools in general. You know, there's something very visceral about being able to work, and like you said, in this case, like the physical representative. The physical representation of the Master Sword, it's not just on the video game screen anymore. It becomes something different. Speaking of which, though, do you find that the actual playing of the video games plays a role in your magical work? And if so, how does that show up?
So yes, I do. Of course, this also just gives me more of an excuse to play the game. Yeah, so, like, of course, going through the hero's journey, you know, with Link and meeting the other characters and whatnot, so it can definitely help you, like, feel closer to their actual, like, spirits. And then, of course, you know, you collect and use all of the different tools and items that Link gets throughout the game and use them to solve puzzles. And so then you kind of get a feel for how the tools would work in that environment. And, you know, it can give you ideas on how it would work in your magical practice and, like, in ritual. Taking the Master Sword again for an example, in Skyward Sword, so in Skyward Sword, you actually do a lot more with the Master Sword because you actually get the origin of the Master Sword. Because it starts out as the Goddess Sword, and you know the way that that Hylia made the Goddess Sword is that you could charge it with power from the heavens by holding it up, and that's called a Skyward Strike. And then you can use the sword to then throw that energy at something. And you're going to need that, but you're actually going to need, spoiler alert, but you're going to need that by the end of the game to defeat Demise. And then, of course, you have to actually upgrade the Goddess Sword into the Master Sword by tempering it in the Goddess Flame. So you got the Flame of Furori and the Flame of Din and the Flame of Nehru. And he's got to go through, like, a special trial in the Silent Realm. And anyone who's played Skyward Sword shudders at the word Silent Realm because those are they're not easy, and they're not supposed to be easy because they're supposed to grow Link's soul and heart to have a balance of the three goddess virtues so that he can actually use the Triforce. And then you have to go through those trials in the Silent Realm first and then get another special item so that you can get to the next area where the Goddess Flame is at. And so, like, it's sort of this very long-winded ritual in order to get Link ready to not only wield the Master Sword, but to actually create the Master Sword. And, of course, Phi is there guiding him the whole time. And then by the end, of course, Zelda is the reincarnated form of the goddess Hylia. And so then after he creates the Master Sword, she gives him and the sword a blessing, and that brings out its true power. And then after that, you have to fight Ghirahim and Demise. And, you know, it's really helpful to have the full power of the Master Sword when you're fighting the Demon King who's trying to wipe out the Earth. so, like, it's this really long ritual that shows growth, and, you know, you have to, you know, so with the different Silent Realms, you kind of have to use the particular virtue that it was made in mind for. So with Sorori's Silent Realm, you needed courage because it was your first Silent Realm. You had no idea what you were doing, you know, so you just kind of had to go for it. And then with Din's Silent Realm, you ended up doing a lot of dashing and climbing because it's in a, that Nehru's Silent Realm, which is in the desert. And that one requires wisdom because you kind of have to time everything as well as strategize how you're going to get across the sand because there's quicksand everywhere. And then, like, there's this one seed of light, I think that's what it's called, that is, like, right above what's called an awakening pool. And if you step in that water, it wakes up all the guardians in the area, and they all try and hit you and kill you. And so you have to time it because it shrinks and then expands. And so you have to push a metal part so that you can stand on it to jump and grab this light, this orb of light, without getting hit by the pool of awakening when it expands to its full its fullness. And then with Din, it's just a matter of just kind of powering through. And you're doing, like, a lot of jumping and things like that. And so, like, it kind of shows you, yeah, you kind of need this particular status virtue to get through this, and that's why it's important for Link to do it. And so, like, it kind of also builds it for you because you have to play through it with Link, if that, you know, if that makes any sense.
Sure. Well, I mean, what it really ends up sounding like, and I mean, I've played enough video games, so it makes sense to me from that perspective, but what it ends up sounding like is an extensive ritual, you know, that people are going through of purification and proving and everything else. So, I mean, you can definitely latch your magic onto that, or even just take that hero's journey and apply it to yourself and channel that into yourself. So I think it's, you know, again, it kind of speaks to one of the advantages that pop culture magic has, which is just that, you know, it gives you more than one way to interact with a given form of, you know, spirituality that you're working with and bring that back into your magical work.
Yeah. And then, like, with Breath of the Wild, you have, there's goddess statues everywhere. And so, like, for me, if I can't make, like, a physical offering that day, I'll go, like, you can collect, like, fruit and things in Breath of the Wild. That's how you heal rather than potions. And so, like, I just make an offering at the statue in-game. So that actually ends up being a huge bonus for me in my practice, especially since I work with Hylia. And most of the statues around the game, mostly goddess statues around the game, are of Hylia. So that's just another helpful thing for me in regards to using the game.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a great example. It's a great example because, I mean, right there again, you are, you're still doing the magical work, or in this case, like the offering. You're just doing it in the game because that's where it worked out. But you're still finding a way to connect with something that's important to you. And I think that speaks to the power of of pop culture and just how magic as a practice can expand in different ways than we might expect because of the different mediums that we have.
Yeah.
So something else I'm curious about, because anyone who's familiar with Zelda is, and if you aren't, well, hey, you're learning a lot about it tonight. But for anyone who isn't familiar, I mean, there's two things that I think are kind of fascinating with Zelda, and they are its music and masks. So can you talk a bit about music in relationship to Zelda and how you work with, how you integrate the music aspects of Zelda into your magic? Because they do a lot with music in Zelda. Even in the first game, you have a flute that you can get that allows you to summon a whirlwind, and you need it actually to get into a dungeon as well.
Yeah, so music plays a huge role in pretty much all of the games. There's a musical item in almost all of the games. I think there's maybe three games that don't have an important musical item in it, and that's Oracle of Seasons and I think Oblivion of Supreme Realm. I haven't played Oblivion of Supreme Realm, so I'm not entirely sure. But like, those are two off the top of my head where you don't have like this like super important magical item that you need to, that you end up using multiple times throughout the story. So we're going to talk about music in Zelda. Of course, the top two games for talking about that is Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask. So where you have the aptly named Ocarina of Time throughout both games, and they play a huge role. So like in Ocarina of Time, you need it to open the dungeon because you'll learn a song for each temple where you go and find the sages and awaken them and rescue them. And of course, then you can use the song to warp back to those dungeons later on. And then Majora's Mask, of course, you actually, the Ocarina of Time actually gives you the power to go back in time and reset the 3 days so that you can save Clock Town from Skull Kid and the Falling Moon. So, like, most of the time when people think about music and Zelda, those are the two games that they think about. And for me, music plays a huge role for me anyway. I'm a very auditory-oriented person, and so I use music for a lot of things. But, like, in my magical practice, I use a lot of the dungeon music for, you know, setting the mood for when I'm, like, doing a ritual or something. I've actually manipulated the weather with the Song of Storm and what's the name of it? And the Wind Requiem from Wind Waker. So, like, those are two prominent examples where I've used the Song of Storm to actually call a storm. And the Wind Requiem changes the wind direction, and it's a short little tune, and you can just like whistle it, and I've gotten the direction of the wind to change. So like, it actually can like have a like effect, you know, similar to if you just did like a storm jar to call a storm, you know, or another, or like a candle spell to pick up the, to cause the wind to pick up and change direction. Music definitely works out in Zelda pop culture magic. What were your thoughts on it?
You know, I think that music plays a huge role in the games. I haven't played all of them or even most of them, but the games that I've played, it always seemed to play a pretty important role. And of course, I think that when it comes to music, I mean, you know, music is another way to connect with the world and communicate with the world, and communicate with it in a way that just the spoken word alone won't do. So, you know, whether you're singing a song or or playing an instrument, you know, there's a way that it can be used to connect with different levels of sound that might otherwise be ignored. And those different aspects of sound can play a pretty important role in connecting with the powers that be. And I say that, you know, kind of as a general thing, not even just as it relates to Zelda, but just in general, because I think a lot of times people forget the potency of music, you know, the potency of our voices, for example. Go on.
I agree with you on that. Music affects, you know, both mundane and magical life. Like, it doesn't even have to be in the context of magic for music to affect us and make us feel either more connected to the world as a whole or even just to ourselves. And so, of course, it would be, like, super potent in magic and connecting to other worlds and to spirits and whatnot and to the forces of nature. So, yeah, I totally agree with you on that.
So the other thing that I wanted to talk about was the theme of masks, because masks also seems to play a pretty important role, at least in one of the games, obviously, because they have the title. So, you know, is that something that you end up working with, and what are your thoughts about the significance of masks as it applies to Zelda?
So with masks actually appear in a couple of games besides Majora's Mask, but they got the biggest role in Majora's Mask, and of course is also where we get the Song of Healing from, and the Song of Healing is, and this is said in the game, is that it's a song that helps weary souls be put to rest, and, you know, helps them to move on after they've died, and that ends up playing the Song of Healing is what gives you the mask, and I'm trying to remember which of the game developers for Majora's Mask said this, but if someone asked why does Link scream every time he puts one of the masks on, it's because he gets a rush of emotion from the spirit from the moment it died into him before he transforms into whatever the mask is, like this is the Zora mask or the Goron mask or the Deku Scrubs mask. And so I think with, you know, of course with masks, we kind of associate that with hiding our identity and, you know, taking on another persona, which actually ties into Persona 5 since that's all about masks. Hiding who, like, what our true person and personality is. But in the context of Zelda, it kind of become a whole other person when you put the mask on, to the point where, other people see you as the person where the mask came from. It's like this. The Zora mask, you get the Zora mask from a musician in the game, a Zora musician in the game who dies trying to help one of his bandmates. And when you put on the mask and you go to the band, they all see you as the bandmate, the musician who died. So you're a completely different person. Link becomes a completely different person when he puts the mask on. And so he kind of has to learn how to blend in with all of these different people, as well as reconcile with the fact that they all see him as this person who only he knows that they died, because he's the only person that knows that they died, and they all see the regular person when he puts the mask on. And so he kind of learns about death, and Majora's Mask is really dark when you think about it. Like, he learns about death and about what it's like to put on a mask and be another person, and how that affects the people around him. So, like, this mask in magical work, you can kind of use it for the same respect, I guess. I mean, I think it could tie in pretty well to ancestor veneration. I know a lot of people find that to be important in their practices. I don't do a whole lot of ancestor veneration work because most of my ancestors are Christian and they probably wouldn't like that. And, you know, about learning, like, about different aspects of yourself and how it can relate to your magical work and how you can grow from facing and reconciling those different sides of yourself. That's 19.
Yeah, I mean, that is the thing about masks. You know, they can let you experience different sides of yourself. It's kind of like video games, actually, because in a sense, you're taking on a mask when you play as a character.
Yeah.
You know, and it allows you to explore part of yourself in a different way than might happen otherwise. So, what are your plans? What are your plans to continue developing this system of magic further? Or do you have any plans or anything along those lines? I'm just really curious.
So for me, especially because, like, I want to be a good resource for people who want to, like, get into all the pop culture magic. For me right now, my plans are developing, like, some holidays. Like, I have a few ideas for that. Next, I know, like, some, like, with, there's, like, Yule and, you know, the comedic end of the year actually was today. I think today was the last day it had, like, a 7-day thing for the end of the year. And I know that because my sister's comedic. And, like, so there's, like, some ideas I have where I actually, like, look at other traditions and see if I can use that to build, like, a little, like, a calendar, you know, with, like, holidays and things for Zelda pop culture magic. And also, of course, you know, having some rituals around that as well. So I have some ideas in the works. And, like, I wanted also, we had a conversation about how death is viewed in Hyrule in our Discord chat the other day. I was thinking about, and it was giving me ideas on, like, okay, well, if someone dies, how would you, you know, would there be a way that you could mourn them? And, like, would there be, like, specific set of rules that could be put together? And so that was something else that I had an idea about that I plan on working on in the near future.
Excellent. So I know we've mostly talked about Legend of Zelda, but could you tell us a little bit about your Persona 5 work and what you're doing with that?
So I just started on that, and I'm not actually done the game yet. Actually, though, like, the Shin Megami Tensei series as a whole, I especially like Persona because it's definitely, it's definitely, like, a good vehicle for shadow work, you know, learning how, you know, going and doing personal work with yourself, either with the aid of, like, spirits or a deity or even just by yourself. And like how we were talking about math earlier, just, like, learning about the different sides of yourself and reconciling them together and how that can help improve your magical work. And with Persona 5, mask and freedom from oppression and from, you know, people and from people who are cruel and may not even realize how cruel they're being or who are really just cruel just to be cruel.
like a lot of the themes in Persona 5 is avoiding ruin and being locked up and trapped by others' expectations, or and like how other people's actions and again like cruelties and things like that can, and like how adults can actually like trap kids into really negative situations, and how other people can trap you in those negative situations, and learning how to empower yourself and get out of that. And of course, you know, and rebelling against that. And, you know, the rebellion is what summons their persona and gives them the power to change things and change their lives for the better. So, like, I'm just exploring those themes right now. And, you know, like I said, I kind of, that's, like, really super new. That's, like, within the last couple weeks, it's new where I started working with the Persona 5.
Well, that's cool though, that you're already starting.
That's
okay. I mean, it's cool that you're already starting to think about it and come up with stuff. I mean, that's kind of the thing about pop culture magic. In a lot of ways, you know, it's fairly exploratory. You know, I'd hesitate to say you're making it up as you go along, because I don't think that's quite accurate. But you're definitely figuring out a lot of what needs to go into it to make it viable. And I think that, you know, that's kind of the interesting challenge with pop culture magic. It's certainly one of the reasons why I like to practice pop culture magic.
Yeah, I like being able to figure it out as I go along and just build on it. And even just like, oh, somebody gave me a suggestion about, like we were talking about how Hyrule views best. And like there were a lot of good suggestions that I hadn't even thought about. And I was like, well, that's great. You know, so like that's one of the things that I like about pop culture, is that not only can you just kind of figure it out as you go along, and but you also get a lot of people with different perspectives that you wouldn't have even thought about, and you know, you can kind of integrate and synthesize them together to make something that, you know, cohesive and works.
Definitely. So do you have any final words of wisdom for us before we close out the show?
Have fun with it, you know. It's all based on the video game, and of course, you know, the Zelda series has been around for 31 years now, so it's not going away anytime soon, and so we're going to get even more, you know, material that we can work with, and the story, and more of the story and the history of Hyrule is fleshed out some more. So this is going to be, you know, I'm excited. So be excited about your pop culture magic. You know, have fun with it. It doesn't have to be super duper serious all the time. You know, and be silly with it. It's all up to you. You know, it's how you make it.
Awesome. So, with that said, I just I want to thank you for coming on to the show. I really enjoyed having you on here and learning a bit more about the work that you're doing, and I know my listeners did as well, so thank you so much.
And thank you for inviting me. This is like my first time doing like a podcast or anything like that, so this was definitely a new experience for me, and it was super fun. It was great. So thank you for inviting me on and giving me the chance to have this new experience.
Well, I'm happy to have done that. You've done a great job, and definitely happy to have you back again at some point. And with that said, I just want to thank all of you who are out there listening. I hope you've enjoyed the show. Please comment, share, do whatever else you'd like. But meantime, also just take care of yourselves, and I'll see you next week.
All right, and thank you for having me, guys.